I gotta see if I can remember how Dory does this. So I think I gotta see something like the John Curley. I can't get it. The John Curley and Sherry Elliker radio program is coming up next. Hopefully John spends the first like opening of the show talking about me so I can listen to John talk about me and our bromance. You know what I mean? So we can all, I can feel important because John actually is going to mention me before his show starts. All right, I got to get out of here. Thanks so much for letting me sit in. I appreciate it, Nicole. Dory Monson is going to be back on Monday. Honor, pleasure. And I will see you guys next time. Bye.
Going on and on and on. That's a long goodbye. Find out who that guy was. Never get him on the air.
Okay, yeah, I'll work on that.
Right. Let me know when we're on, Andrew.
Right now.
Got it. Of course, you recognize that music. Spike O'Neill from Spike in the Impalers, of course, joining me today because Sherry takes the day off. And I have known Spike, ever since he scared the hell out of me because he looks like the type of guy that should have a 666 tattooed right in the middle of his eyebrows. He's got that look about him.
Had to know my elementary school encouraged tattooing at my elementary school level.
I have to say, for those that recognize the name Spike O'Neill, all those many, 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 many years working with Bob Rivers, it's a pleasure to be able to talk with you. I haven't seen you in a while. You and I first met a long, long time ago. It might have been at some Harley convention or something like that. But
No. Don't sell yourself short. It was an auction for Children's Hospital in which you raised an insane amount of money. There were Harleys involved. I'll give you that. But there were no. There was no. Boob contest or none of the tawdry stuff that goes with the Harley world. It was a charitable event for a great cause, and you, my friend, knocked it out of the park.
Well, all right, enough of this. Let's get into diving in. Welcome, Spike. I had said I'd try to get you a job, and you said to me, that guy over there, Cairo, hates me. They'll never hire me. But here you are. Good for you. All right. I don't, wherever that guy is, I don't know where he is, but he wasn't able to stop you from coming on and filling in for Sherry today. So some of the finding is that it's hard to fill jobs in Washington State, despite the fact that there's few job openings. That seems a little confusing, but what's happened is that we were at an unemployment rate of about 3.4% in 2019. Government locked down and destroyed all these jobs. Unemployment rate went up to like 14% or something like that. And now we haven't grown as quickly as the others. The others have sort of went high unemployment rates, 16, 18, 20%, and now they bounce back up again. So there's still people out there that need people, but there's not as many people applying for the jobs. You get a chance to take a look at this, Spike?
I did, and I think what it really reflects is the fact that Seattle was insulated better than the rest of the country. Is that a fair assessment of how things played out?
Yeah, that is. It was shocking. Tom and I would look at those numbers occasionally. They would come out. The number of people that were able to work from home, right?
Right.
So if you were in a tech business, it was a big chunk of the population in Seattle. They just said, okay, I have to work from home, fine. I'm not unemployed, fine. But then there was 360,000 people that lost their jobs that were in the restaurant business and in the entertainment and the hospitality business, whether it's hotels or event centers and things like that. I know I got kicked in the lower region when the government locked everything down. I lost all my auction business, and
right,
so many other, all the other jobs went away. What you remember? What happened to you when they finally decided that they were going to go
lock them up,
Shanghai on us? Yeah, lock them down. Yeah,
I had already been kicked to the curb by the contraction of radio opportunities. So, that happened to me prior to COVID. I got whacked with corporate 19, I think I like to call it. And I was trying to reinvent myself in my mid-50s, which is never an easy thing to do. Usually it happens to a guy who had a midlife crisis, bought a vet, cheated on his wife. I didn't go through that. I didn't take that exit. My radio station got bought by a bigger company, and, the gravy train ran out of track. So I was already trying to reinvent myself, went into advertising and marketing. And the small boutique marketing agency I was working with, they closed their doors because all of our client base in the restaurant, hospitality, healthcare, doctor's offices, cosmetic doctoring, they all closed their doors. All their customer bases got sent home. So I got sent home. And then when the nation was shut down for a year and a half, you know, I drank from the Golden Goblet 401k.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. So here I am starting over. So you taking the effort to single-handedly, one job at a time, bring Seattle back to work. I appreciate it, my friend. I can't tell you how much I appreciate
Spike,
it.
Spike, let me ask you this. When you would sit there in the dark, I assume with some Jim Beam or maybe some cheaper stuff like Wild Turkey.
Remember the last name. Remember the last name.
And
Jameson, Jameson Irish.
Oh, Jameson. Okay.
Yeah. When the government check would come in, I'd reach up to the red breast, but usually it was just this off the shelf, Jamie.
Okay. So you're sipping it, you know?
Yeah.
And as you're going through, scrolling through on a laptop and you're looking at the jobs, you're thinking, I could do that. Like, did you find yourself doing the, I don't know what that is, but yeah, I think I got skills for that. And then you go down to what the requirements were, and you're like, I can probably fake my way in on that job.
I can't read that. I can't. First off, the first number of my age is a 5. I'm already. you and I come from a somewhat similar background. You were in broadcasting. You were in entertainment. You were a creative guy. And those skill sets really don't transfer to a lot of other careers.
No.
First thing I had to do was find out what my skill sets could become, you know, in the way of marketing, in the way of creativity, in the way of interpersonal skills, working in front of crowds, you know, and my dear friend Bob Rivers, who I got to work with for almost 3 decades. He said to me, look, you made people happy for 24. We were blessed. We got to do what we did for so long. You made people happy every day. So you can do that. You can do that in an office. You can do that in a business, just one-on-one. So when he reframed it that way, when he reframed it, look, you listen to what people want, take what they've got, take the skill set you've got and apply that to that situation. You can do just what you did every day for the last 25 years. Just do it one-on-one, which really helped out a bunch.
Did that turn into a paycheck?
Oh, hell no. I mean, everything was still locked down. No, what it did was at least I saw the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I went back to school, you know, part of that socialist, you know, handout mentality. The state's unemployment program helped to retrain me. And I went back to school and I got a marketing degree, a full marketing degree. And since I was in my 50s, as opposed to my late teens, early 20s, the first time I did all that crap, I pulled down grades and I committed myself and I racked a 3.89 GPA and graduated. But then still I faced a job market that was, you know, looking for younger people. I couldn't tell you how many opportunities I lost out to people 25, 30 years younger than me. Because employers were under the misconception that they were going to hire somebody for a career.
Right.
You know, why should I hire you in your 50s so I can hire this guy in his 30s? Who's going to give me 20 some years? I'm like, have you seen any kind of statistics on how long people stay in jobs? Yeah. So I'm going to hang on to that job like, you know, tooth and nail, like I'm hanging over a cliff because I literally am. The kid you're hiring, he's going to bounce in 2 years.
But did you ever say this when you were sitting there across from these people?
I had one opportunity to actually say that. A lot of times I didn't because you don't want to burn a bridge, so you're at least, you know, over the river. And I wasn't over the river yet. I did get a chance to say that one time. I said, you know, I appreciate that the kid that you hired, and I used the word kid in a pejorative intentionally. Yeah. Yeah. The kid you hired, I'm sure, has crazy skills. He's probably got fresher skills than I do. I'm dusting off half of my brain that sat idle for 30 some years.
Yeah.
I said, but I'm going to stay with you. I said, they had to drag me from my last job after 27 years. They had to drag me out. They had to hand me a box and escort me to the freaking door. I don't go anywhere. So that's why
you were sitting across from somebody who was 10 years your junior, assuming.
Oh yeah. Looking down on me.
By the way, when you go to a job interview, and you look in the mirror, and you've got this weird-ass sort of ZZ Top's, you know, brother-in-law look. Did you think, like, how do you clean it up before you walk in there? Do you braid it?
Do you put on a suit?
Do you comb that hair of yours? What do you do to try to look presentable?
I just remember my days in court. I cut 6 inches off the beard. I did. I had to. You know, it's still there, and it still rocks when the band plays.
You kept tripping over it. Yes,
you know, you can't wag your beard at some guy across the desk and expect he's going to give you the opportunity you need. That's not going
to
happen.
I'm trying to imagine you just before you leave home. I assume you still had one. And you look in the mirror and you think, you're like, Spike, I got that 3.8 in marketing. Just Mike, let me give him that sort of pep talk. And you look good. You're ready to go. And you look in the mirror and you're like, that, I'm ready, right? You got that, got that lean and hungry look as you head out the door. And you go in there and you're sitting across it. What was the look on their face when you walked in? Were they thinking, my God, just don't kill my family? Did they have that sort of you're taking me hostage look?
For you listeners at home, I wasn't the guy from Raising Arizona looking for the stolen baby. I wasn't that guy. I mean, I was bad, but I wasn't that bad. You know, and I got to tell you, I'm not sure how familiar you are with the West Wing, the theatrical portrayal of liberal government. There's a very famous scene in the West Wing where the Bartlett administration was preparing for their second presidential debate, the second campaign's debate with James Brolin's character, I believe. And the president's wife, to get him juiced, leans over as he's about to wish him luck and cuts his tie off 30 seconds before he goes live on air. Right. So I leaned over to kiss my wife on my way out the door to a job interview. She grabbed the bottom of my beard with a pair of scissors in her other hands and she took 6 inches off.
Wow.
That's how it happened. Cause I didn't have the cojones to do it. I thought the image was everything. The beard was everything. I thought the image was everything. It was all I had. And she looked me in the eyes and says, "You are so much more than what you are on the outside." And that's bedrock. I mean, and you mentioned if I still have my home, I do because of my wife, because of Melissa. You know, she made sure we cut where we had to cut, did what we had to do, sacrificed what we had to sacrifice. And we're, you know, my daughter's a senior in high school this year. Go Shorewood. Go Storm Rays, I think it is, since they PC had to kill the word Thunderbirds was deemed offensive. The Shorewood Storm Rays. But she's a senior in high school, and she didn't have to change schools. We didn't have to move, didn't have to relocate. You know, the continuity of my daughter's high school years was so much more important to me than what I did for a living or my ego or my persona or if anybody recognized me at a restaurant or whatever. That was, and my wife made sure we had that, and we still do.
Okay, so summing up, talking more about the unemployment rate in the state of Washington. No, only kidding. So summing up the whole thing of this personal sort of, which I really appreciate you being so open and honest in this.
I was telling the same story to a coffee barista yesterday. So to do it for you and this audience is a pleasure.
All right. And this is unfair, but I think you can do it. So what of the experience of the whole thing from getting the box and leaving radio and then not being Spike O'Neill, not being on the radio every single day, not being part of the Bob Rivers thing, and then being alone and losing the job and not being the, you know, breadwinner in the family. What's the greatest lesson? What did you learn about yourself, Spike, from all of that?
Oh, I would have to say the greatest lesson learned, and I think I already mentioned, referenced it at least, it came from Bob. You know, he boiled down what I was able to accomplish for 30 years and what the essence of that was making people smile, making people happy, making people glad that they interacted with me. Mm-hmm. And what I learned from all this thing was that the skills I had developed were marketable outside of an entertainment career. And that what I really had to focus on was my ability to listen to people, to use creativity to solve a problem and to make somebody glad they engaged. And that gave me the avenue out of the darkness, if you will.
Yeah.
Not to put too much of James Joyce on it, but I did mention that I'm Irish and I'm halfway into a fifth of Jameson since we started. Brian got me here at 1 o'clock this afternoon and that was a 2 hours of pre-funk's a bad idea.
Yeah, very bad idea. Well, that's great. Listen, for so many people when they hit those 50s and all of a sudden they're out the door and then somebody younger steps in. My sister is dealing with it right now. She's 61 years old. She's brilliant. She's a great college professor. But she says they look at me. They're like, do I want to hire a 61-year-old white female? She goes, like, they won't even interview me. They won't even look at me. They won't look at the resume. I'm not even part of it. And same thing about I'll be loyal for a very, very long time.
Right.
It's like if you ever go into the Humane Society and you adopt an old dog.
You bet.
That old dog. Yeah, that old dog. Sure, it's lost its platter like you. And if you need to get it up off the couch, you have to grab both of its
legs. I need a little help with the hips. But honey, helps me off the couch.
Yeah, you bet. But the loyalty. And loyalty is also part. The dog can't hear or see, so it's staring at you the entire time. But take that aside. It is the loyalty of the individual. So you don't have a long runway, as they say. You're not going to be in it for that long, but for the miles and the time that you would be committed to a business, you'd be there for a long time. But again, if the person sitting on the other side looking at your resume just simply can't relate to you because you're bringing up references from the West Wing, which was on 20 years ago, you know, that might have hurt you as well. By the way, did you carry? Where is the part of the beard at this point? Is it hanging up on the wall?
It's actually braided, hanging from the rearview mirror of my minivan. How about that, huh? It's hanging there. Yeah, I rock a minivan with a Superstar system. You bet I do, man.
With the weird grizzly gray wiry hair hanging from the rearview mirror, with also the tassels from your high school cap and gown.
And the 37 backstage passes from the previous Impaler gigs that I refuse to let go of. Yes, it's right there.
Hold on to the whole thing. Good. You know, and then you got the little tiny tree that smells like something, something like a tree.
That's in case I forget the odor, and I just a little pine tree under each arm. I'm good to go, man.
Oh, my God. Mickey, are you there enjoying Spike?
Oh, yeah. Spike was here 2 hours early. We're old friends.
We are.
Okay.
That girl can handle her Jameson, too.
This portion of the traffic is brought to you by Jameson. Don't drink and drive.
Here's Mickey. Away for free, man.
There we go. Keel Mortgage. That's right. Anybody need a mortgage? It's Keel Mortgage. Laura Keel and everybody at Keel Mortgage. Can't wait to hear from you. Refinance that house of yours. It's Keel Mortgage. 1-888-778-KIEL. John Curley, Sherry Elliker Show. Sherry taking a day off. I don't think she's ever taken a day off, but Spike O'Neill steps in. Good to have you, Spike, along for the ride. You see this little town there up in Canada? This is just to give you some idea of how incredibly boring it is in this town. Here we go.
The city of Miramichi is a new dynamic city, which was formed in 1995.
By the way, the music that you put underneath this that costs $1.29, and it just, you put it underneath it, makes it sound like something's happening. You get this music listening.
After the amalgamation of five municipalities and several rural areas, approximately 41,000 people live within a 40-kilometer radius of the city, and enjoy a modern yet uncomplicated lifestyle.
Modern but uncomplicated.
And for $1.29,
nothing to do. There's nothing to do there.
For $1.29, you've got a hop and burg. John, you should be in fiscal responsibility for these small towns, man. I want to go there for $1.29's worth of music.
Miramichi has the fifth largest municipal tax base in New Brunswick, and living here is affordable. A typical home costs $83,000, while the average household income is $48,000.
Oh, there will be math.
6.5% higher than the provincial average. The city of Miramichi serves as the gateway to the famous Miramichi River.
Okay. It is now famous because a bunch of people run around that town in their uncomplicated lifestyle looking for what, Spike?
Oh, I read this. Our friend Jacob turned me on to this. Buried treasure or treasure? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, yes.
Hidden cash?
Yes. I think it's up to $1,300 or something now. But does anybody know where the money's coming from?
I didn't see that in the story, no.
They don't yet, actually. Yeah, it's a big mystery. There's some speculation about certain members of the community. I think it might be, but no one has come forward and admitted that it's them.
Yeah, but it's fun because you go into Facebook, you get some of the clues, and then people run around and try to fund the money where it's hidden. Does the money add up? I know they put $100 in. I know it's $1,300 right now because I'm heading up there this weekend. Let me get directions.
A world-renowned salmon fishing and hunting destination.
Yeah.
But the region is quickly becoming recognized as a great place to live.
Whoever put this video together, they think, does the music work for you?
Visit and do business. Since 1995, over $104 million in new construction has occurred.
All right. Have you ever been involved in one of these treasure hunts trying to find money or something? I know you guys used to do stuff like this with Bob Rivers. Didn't you guys have a thing with a telephone booth or something?
When we started, our producer, Joe, Downtown Joe, he's like, how about if I just go to a phone booth and give stuff away? I swear it was his idea. The lawyers require I say that. We had a thing called phone booth trivia, and Joe would go to a various phone booth around the Seattle metro area, as far out as, you know, Auburn, Graham, north up to Bellingham, wherever, to spread out the love to our audience. And I'm at this phone booth at First and Pine, wherever, and first person here that can answer this tough trivia question, the answer is going to be C, wins a prize. When the third traffic accident with people racing to the phone booth occurred, they asked that we stop doing this. We asked that we stop giving people a target to race to in the middle of morning drive.
And why was it a phone booth?
Because, John, you know how old I am. I just told you.
Yes.
There weren't cell phones yet, dude. We had to go to living, breathing, smelly phone booths.
Okay, so he's on the phone.
He goes to a phone booth,
talking to you guys.
Right, calls us from the station.
Okay, and then people race over. And then what were they winning?
Anything from T-shirts to started concert tickets, dinner, gift certificates—the kind of the stuff you load out of the prize closet at a rock radio station.
Right,
but it could be Stones tickets. One time, it was Paul McCartney tickets. It was we had good stuff too. You know, sure it was a spoiled 5-pound rack of raw beef one day. That's all we had left out of the kitchen. But you know, you give what you give. And the funny thing is, people didn't care what it was.
Oh no!
Just meeting Joe. We had sponsors create Downtown Joe's phone booth tour T-shirts to get their name on the back of the T-shirt to associate it with this contest. It became so popular.
Would you always feel weird when you guys used to set those booths up and people would come and stand in line and then just sort of you'd see them kind of eyeing the keychain and the mouse pad and the beer cozy that you're giving out? And can I have more than one of these? Who's sadder, you sitting there or them collecting the crap that you were giving them?
Oh, I was getting paid. They're clearly sadder. I was doing it for money. No, you know, it's funny, John, because I worked with a lot of people over the years, a lot of brilliantly talented people and a lot of come and go through radio. Yeah. You know, I worked with a guy one time and he shall remain nameless, but he was bitching one night. I can't believe people come up to me all the time and won't even let me have a beer.
Is it Mike Salk?
Nope. I will say there is a small town in Seattle named after this gentleman, but I won't give his name. But he was, I can't believe it, man. People go to sleep. I'm trying to have a beer. Like, dude, your name is on the back of your station softball jersey. If you don't want to be recognized, take off your freaking jersey and quit your bitching.
Yeah.
I never got tired of people saying how much they appreciated what we did and enjoyed what we did. When folks tell you that, hey, man, I remember when your kid was born. You guys are part of the family. There is no greater compliment an audience can give you than you're part of the family.
Yeah. Radio does have that immediate bonding intimacy. When we did this thing on Evening Magazine, I was so desperate. Every couple of months, they would come downstairs with the ratings and say, yeah, I don't know how much longer we can keep the show going. So I would then do stuff like take my own money and put it somewhere, hide it somewhere, and then we would shoot the show. The show was always shot one day in advance, and then we would give clues as to where it was. I would call Felix Bonnell over that knew all the history stuff, so we'd give these history clues, and then eventually it would land in some place somewhere. And then the next day at 7 o'clock at night or 7:30, we would be sitting there videotaping the people come running over to get the cat. My money.
That's great.
But the problem was we stuck it underneath like a garbage can or something, and then these two people running to it, and the one guy gets to the garbage can and just pushes this lady out of the way to get the money. And then we're like, oh, we can't show that anymore. So same thing, couldn't do it because everybody would converge upon the spot at the same time.
Yeah.
And then no one was really working out like, oh, you kind of got here ahead of time. So
you take the $500.
Right. And this desperate move of just anything like paying people to continue to watch. But for you guys, I like the idea of the phone booth. I used to listen to these guys at JFK, WJFK. It was Don and Mike. Was that the name of that those guys? And they used to do this thing that if you were in your car, listening to Don and Mike, you had to go over to somebody else's car at an intersection. Get out of your car and go over to the other car and then get the person to switch over incredibly, unbelievably dangerous things, but you never really thought it all the way through. Like you and me, Bob Rivers and others were like, this is a good idea, but then you don't worry about the legal part of it.
Right.
That was never like, what's the worst thing?
Right. Well, now we have to factor in the worst of humanity into every decision we make. You really have to factor in, you know, how low can this go?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've got this thing. I'm the MC at the Memorial Day parade coming up in Easton, the Memorial Day celebration. And I was telling Jacob, let's get like a float or something and then, you know, have it come down the middle of the road and then catch on fire. It's something kind of fun.
Animal House life.
But Jacob's like, I don't think the station will allow us to do that.
The burn rate on tissue paper is phenomenal.
Forgiveness, never permission.
Right.
Never ask for permission because somebody upstairs in management, we can't have you doing that. So, it's stinkers. Taking all the fun.
All the fun gone.
Yeah. All the fun. Mickey, I know. Mickey could go mm-hmm. one way or the other. Mickey's either one of these people who would go along with something like that, or if she all of a sudden said, I've got my eyes set on management, and then she would put the kibosh on it. I don't want to be involved.
John. No, really? I'm an ask for forgiveness kind of a woman.
Yes, girl. Yes, all three of us. Yeah. Yes. Don't tell Jacob.
What are you guys talking about? I feel like I should know.
He's writing everything down. Is that important? Yeah. He's writing this all and putting time designations. Is this important?
Yeah. All right. The three of us will meet later on with a plan. Go right to us at mynorthwest.com. Come on into the state roofing text line 1-888-973-5476. Reading more about this guy. This man sheds 87 pounds while exercising every day because Taco Bell has taken a menu item. This does not make any sense at all. Normally, if you want to do something to get the attention of somebody, like a major corporation or a government or something, you inhalate yourself or you do something like, okay, every day that this doesn't happen, I'm going to like cut off another, digit or something.
Oh, man.
You inflict pain upon yourself. It's like a hunger strike.
Right.
This guy, this doesn't make sense. He wants Taco Bell to bring back an item that I'm sure is not exactly good for you. So in order to convince them to bring back a cheesy, heart-clogging menu, Taco Bell, something, he's going to keep working out every day?
And he has for almost over 400 days now. But, right? He thought he'd get their attention much sooner, obviously. Yeah. But this guy saved his life, though, during this, right? He's dropped 87 pounds.
Day one of exercising every day until Taco Bell brings back the grilled stuffed nacho.
That was him walking to turn on the camera, by the way.
So you can be unhealthy? I mean, I want to get lose weight so that they'll bring back this taco thingamajigger so that I can eat them again.
Day two of exercising every day until Taco Bell brings back the grilled stuffed nacho. Day three of exercising every day until Taco Bell brings back the grilled stuffed nacho. Woo! Day four of exercising every day until Taco Bell brings back the grilled stuffed nacho. Day five of exercising every day until...
I mentioned there's 400 of these, right, John?
I've got all of them for you.
Taco Bell brings back the grilled stuffed nacho.
Skip ahead to day 370. He's like, oh, yeah, Randy Minnow is going to snap into a taco.
It's like somebody, I'm going to run every day, improve my cardiovascular system until Marlboro brings back the unfiltered cigarettes. I don't get this. It's inconsistent.
I want the red box of death, and I want it now.
I don't see this. Well, I don't see these two things working together.
Well, I thought the same thing. These are two stories that do not go well together. It's the old Sesame Street. What one of these things doesn't belong here, right? But then if you look at it, if you peel back the taco, peel back the layers of the taco, and figure out what this guy's doing, there's actually some real underlying genius to this.
All right.
Because what's his goal, first off? What's his goal? It's not just to get a meal. I think his goal is
448,000 TikTok followers.
Yeah, well, that's a side benefit that everybody shoots for, is to become the infamy of notoriety, my viral moment. And he's got it. He's got it now. I guarantee he didn't start with 448,000 TikTok viewers, and he didn't start with national attention. I think his goal was free food. I think that's why you tie into a Taco Bell. You want free food. Now, since you've dropped 87 pounds, you can live longer eating free Taco Bell. I think they give a guy free food for life on their food. That's what, 10 months, maybe a year. But now he's got decades. He's dropped 87 pounds.
Yeah, see, that's not a good bet for Taco Bell, then. No, I don't think Taco Bell's, it doesn't put itself off as, like, health food. It seems inconsistent. Am I the only one? It seems inconsistent on
no,
this.
No. It's a completely bad match. It's a bad match.
Should he have done the reverse? He refused to work out until Taco Bell?
I will sit here and get wider until Taco Bell brings back the extra chalupa.
Right. Like, not until I get 11 guys from the fire department that have to take the door jamb out. Take the wall off.
Genie Lift Crane will sponsor the event, bring you out of the second floor.
Right. I'm going to get up to 1,600 pounds until they bring the back. Talk hell. Oh. It's just, whatever. Look, it worked. We talked about it on this show.
Yep.
There we are. Done. The guy's name is...
Who cares?
Right, exactly.